Can you talk a little bit about sort of what the data are right now on the Oncotype DX assay and what your thoughts are that have led you to incorporate that in your practice?
I accepted the data little by little. When it first came out, I was a little skeptical, and as more data came in from different data sets, then I felt that it was probably more robust. Initially, the score was built on small uncontrolled studies just to make sure that they could do the assay right and that they knew which genes were the ones that were important. And then when they took it to the validative study, the NSABP study B14, they did show quite well in that study that it did track with risk. Now, since that time, there's even been more data, and this is from the NSABP B20, where not only is the risk higher if your recurrence score is higher, but those are the patients that derive the benefit from chemotherapy. So it was really that second study, which just came out recently, that really led me to have more confidence in it, and I realized that more and more data are going to come in over time.
I guess one of the striking things about that second data set was that in the high-risk patients, there was such a dramatic effect of chemotherapy.
Right. In fact, it was that high-risk patient that really was driving the entire number for the whole trial. So there was about a 25% benefit in that study. So that's pretty substantial. So if that really holds up in further studies, I think the Oncotype DX will be even more powerful than we're assuming it is now.
Do you see the Oncotype moving into node-positive tumors and other situations?
I see no reason why it shouldn't. I think that node-negative and node-positive is a continuum. Now, obviously, we think of it as a discrete entity. It's either node-positive or node-negative, but really, you can have small nodal metastases, larger ones. So we have to understand that we're dealing with a continuum. And there's no reason to believe that that prognostic factor is going to be any different in node-negative than node-positive. You may have to adjust the numbers upward a little bit if you're dealing with node-positive, but I think that the range will still hold. In other words, a low recurrence score in someone with a positive node is still going to mean a lower risk of recurrence. Now, the same score for a node-negative versus a node-positive is going to be associated with a differential risk, I believe.
So what happened with this woman's Oncotype?
Well, this patient came back with a high Oncotype score of 33, and that corresponds to a distant recurrence risk at 10 years of upwards of 25%. So for this patient, we ended up going with chemotherapy. The patient felt more comfortable about the decision. She was obviously concerned and scared that it meant a higher risk, but it gave her more resolve to move ahead with the chemotherapy and felt confident about it and clearly felt that the side effects would be justified given the benefit she was getting.
I guess bottom line is you can turn around and say to her that the relative risk reduction in the high-risk group was about 75%. That was my read on it, that the 3 out of 4 relapses were avoided with chemotherapy in the high-risk group. Was that your take?
Yes, the benefit there is quite dramatic. And that probably dilutes out the average benefit that we see in these trials. We talk about lowering the risk by maybe a quarter or a third. It very well could be that only a third of the patients are benefiting, and those thirds are actually getting a 75% reduction, as was suggested in the study. Now, these numbers may not hold up on larger analysis. I don't think we should take the 75% reduction too literally at this point, but I think we can say in more general terms that the benefit is not distributed equally across the population.
So what kind of chemotherapy did you use with her, and how did she tolerate it?
Well, we decided to go with chemotherapy, and in my mind, when I'm going to use chemotherapy like AC, then I figure you might as well add the taxane in for the additional benefit, because when you look at the side effects of AC versus AC Taxol, you find that the long-term side effects are no different. Cardiac toxicity, leukemia risk. The one thing that is different is these patients have a longer time of chemotherapy and associated symptoms and fatigue, and then more importantly, I think neuropathy is something to be concerned about, especially in older people, people with diabetes. These are the people that really have problems with neuropathy, so I don't want to minimize the addition of a taxane. In younger patients, it tends not to be as much of a problem, and when we talked about the higher risk, we decided to just go for the whole regimen of dose-dense AC Taxol.
And how did she tolerate it?
She ended up tolerating it very well. This was actually a recent patient, and she's still in the process of completing chemotherapy. She has continued to work through it. I'd say she was, you know, in the quarter top group in terms of symptoms, so she was fortunate not to have these symptoms.
What are the main problems that you see people experience who receive dose-dense AC paclitaxel?
Initially, it's the fatigue. That's the main problem. younger people tend to have a little more in the way of nausea and vomiting. Maybe a quarter of people will have some degree of it, even with the antiemetics. The other thing we're seeing with the dose-dense AC is a little more in the way of mucocutaneous symptoms. So we do have more stomatitis, mucositis. Some people even have tenderness of the hands and the feet, which is something we didn't used to see in the non-dose-dense era.